Hello and welcome to 444's most accurate podcast. My name is John Paulson, and usually at this point in the podcast, you're hearing Anthony Stalter's voice. But Anthony and his wife just gave birth, presumably his wife just gave birth to their first daughter. So he's still in the hospital, and instead of making him try to record a pod from the hospital, I decided to call an audible this week, and we have TJ Hernandez of 444 on the line. TJ, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Congrats to Anthony and his family. Hopefully, I could fill his shoes well.
Yes, if any listeners want to wish him congratulations, just to hit him up on Twitter at Anthony Stalter. It'd be great if his mentions were filled with congratulations on the birth of his first daughter. So to have TJ on today for two reasons. He has two articles that he has released recently, two really good articles that deserve to be read more than just us talking about, hearing us talk about them. One is how is Hugh Jackson impact the Browns' 2016 fantasy outlook. The other is using advanced stats to identify seven breakout quarterbacks and busts. So we're going to start with the Hugh Jackson article. If you enjoy this conversation, you may want to check out a previous podcast. I forget the date, but he came on, TJ came on and talked about Mike Mularkey and another new offensive coordinator. I forget which one. Do you remember which one it was?
Adam Gase.
Adam Gase, is not offensive coordinator, but play caller in Miami. Really good discussion about how these play callers affect the fantasy players in those offenses. So today we're going to talk about Hugh Jackson. So you want to just start us off with an overview of Hugh Jackson and how he calls his plays?
Sure. So all of these studies kind of fit the same model. I'm just looking at pass run splits, just because that's obviously something that play callers really control, and then how they split up those passes and runs. So running back touches, wide receiver targets, all the things that offensive coordinators are really going to control a lot outside of just fantasy scoring. So looking at Hugh Jackson, he's historically been one of the run heaviest coaches in the league. He's been at least 3% over the league average in terms of run play percentage in all four of his years as a play caller. It's 2 years with the Raiders, 2010 and 2011, and 2 years with the Bengals, 2014 and 2015. All of those years, the league average has been right around 42%. Obviously, it's went down a little bit as we've got closer to the present, but Hugh has ran on 48 to around 48% of the time in every one of his stints as a play caller. So really, really high. And he's also been one of the most consistent play callers in the league in terms of his pass run splits. That's something I've looked at and I've tweeted out a bit how consistent play callers are. And regardless of if his teams have been winning or losing, he's been very, very heavy in the run game. So that's really interesting to note about Hugh. And that's just a quick snapshot. If you want, we could get into the position by position analysis
Yes,
of Hugh's
so I'm
impact.
curious. Yeah, I'm curious about Robert Griffin III, who people are assuming will win that job. Is he stepping into a good situation? Obviously, Josh Gordon being out, they have Corey Coleman there at receiver, Gary Barnidge, Duke Johnson's a good pass catching back. I wouldn't classify this as a good group of pass catchers at this point, but that could change, especially if Gordon was to be reinstated. But what do you think about Robert Griffin with relation to how Hugh calls passes and what kind of offensive efficiency that his teams have had?
Sure. So, despite the Hugh Jackson's past teams being historically run heavy, they've actually been quite efficient in terms of scoring offense. But that hasn't necessarily translated to huge fantasy numbers outside of last year, where Andy Dalton had a really nice season. And a little bit of that has to do with volume, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that Hugh just hasn't had very great quarterbacks. His primary quarterback was Jason Campbell in 2010. Carson Palmer obviously struggled with the Raiders in 2011, probably played a little below his expectation, but that was probably a lot more to do with the weapons around him than Carson Palmer's skill level itself. And then in 2014, Andy Dalton was also missing a lot of his weapons. So last year, with a full array of weapons for a competent quarterback, we saw Andy Dalton perform very well under Hugh Jackson. But I would expect that Hugh sticks to a more run-heavy game plan with whether RG3 wins the job or it ends up being McCown. It kind of fits that that mediocre quarterback model that Hughes had. So I think that'll lead to a lower pass volume and probably not a ton of fantasy success for RG3, who when he was great, he also relied a lot on his running ability, and we've seen his rushes wane even when he was starting back in 2014. He was barely a top 10 quarterback in terms of rushing fantasy points for quarterback. So not huge hopes for the quarterback position under Hugh.
So let's move on to the running back position, where there is some upside here. Isaiah Crowell figures to be the top running back on first and second down. Probably will lead the team in carries, but Duke Johnson is going ahead of Crowell in PPR leagues for sure. I'm not sure about standard formats, but a really good pass catching back. This looks like a similar situation to the Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard, or Giovanni Bernard backfield last year. Do you want to talk a little bit about how he will split this up?
Sure. So, like we've already mentioned, Hugh really favors touches to his running backs. His running backs average about 62% of the team touches, but on the individual player level, Hugh's really favored a running back committee. He's never had a running back account for 60% of the team touches. We saw in Oakland more of an even split. We saw Darren McFadden and Michael Bush share a lot of passing and rushing roles, whereas once Hugh got to Cincinnati, we saw more defined roles. Jeremy Hill more running between the tackles when the Bengals were winning, and then Gio more in a passing role. So I think that's something we'll see a lot more in Cleveland, them having more defined roles, and assuming that their team is going to be behind a lot, I think that's going to favor Duke Johnson a lot in the passing game, and I think he has potential to be a top 20 back in PPR leagues, although I do think his ceiling will be a little bit capped just because he usually does like to stick to that committee.
Yeah, Jeremy Hill last year had 223 carries, 15 receptions. Giovanni Bernard had 115, 54 carries, and 49 catches. So you're looking at, I don't know, 200 or so touches for Bernard, and maybe 240 or so touches for Jeremy Hill. There was a stat that I pulled up. You talked about the splits when the Bengals, or the Browns in this case, would be trailing. Last year, when the Bengals were trailing, Bernard saw 33 touches to Hill's 32 touches. So he actually out-touched Hill when they were trailing. When they were ahead, Hill saw more touches. He saw 206 touches to 170 for Bernard. So if you look at this season and you look at their over-under on wins, which I'm sure is pretty low, they're probably going to be trailing, and that could mean that Duke Johnson has a larger share of the running back touches, but the overall running back touches might decline from last year's Bengals team, just simply because he's going to have to throw the ball downfield a little bit more. But you said he usually sticks with the running game even in dire circumstances, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that has much to do with him sticking to the running game as much as just that the running backs are being rotated and he has that passing back. So we're seeing
Okay.
those pass catching running backs being very heavily involved even when they are losing. So I think that might be a little bit of an explanation why we see such a high percentage of the team touch besides just them being ahead.
So Duke Johnson is going in the was it the fifth round?
Yeah, and MFL 10s right now, right around 5.
Okay, so that's a PPR format, so that makes sense. That looks like a good spot for him, kind of in there with Geo, Danny Woodhead, those guys. I think that's a good round to grab a PPR pass catching back. So moving on to the receivers, Corey. At this point, it's Corey Coleman as the number one receiver. I'm a little worried about him. Just because there's Josh Gordon, but I'm not really worried that Josh Gordon's actually going to play. But I feel like Coleman, if I draft Coleman in the sixth or seventh round, I know Josh Gordon will be reinstated, and then Coleman will be his value will tank a little bit. But what do you think of, let's assume that Coleman is a top receiver there.
It's all going to really depend on how Coleman comes along as a rookie receiver. We've seen in the past, outside of the 2014 season, that rookie receivers tend to come along very slowly. But When Hugh Jackson has had a very clear number one, he's given them a big amount of the targets. We've seen even Darius Heyward-Bey back in 2011, he had 22% of Oakland's targets. And then AJ Green, obviously, is one of the better receivers in the league, 24% and 27% target share in 2014 and 2015, respectively. But the one thing that does concern me is that in Hugh's first season as the Raiders play caller back in 2010, we saw him with Darius Heyward-Bey, who was in his second year as a very highly drafted receiver. And Hugh didn't necessarily force targets on Heyward-Bey just because the team had spent high draft capital on him. He figured Heyward-Bey hadn't come along as they liked him to, and Lewis Murphy actually ended up leading the team in targets. So if Corey Coleman doesn't come along as expected, then Hugh's not afraid to just kind of spread the ball around and focus on other positions or as tight end or running backs in the passing game. So a little bit up in the air. I think we're gonna have to wait to see Coleman in preseason, how he's developing with his route tree and how much they're depending on him with those starter snaps.
And they've been speaking positively about Coleman and the preseason, the OTAs and the mini camp. Hugh Jackson has said that he's come along nicely at this point, but he's a sixth round pick right now. He's going 605, 35th receiver off the board, going between Allen Hurns, going before Michael Crabtree, Tyler Lockett, DeSean Jackson, Marvin Jones. How do you feel about Coleman at that with that draft capital?
Right now, not knowing exactly how he's going to develop, that's a little too pricey for my taste. Again, if we get into the preseason and we see him performing really well and we think he's going to get towards that 23% target share, then that's top 20-ish wide receiver status in terms of target share. Also depends how I'm going to be drafting. If I'm going with a wide receiver early approach or a zero running back approach, then I might be a little more inclined to take Coleman just because I'm not going to need him to anchor my teams, and he could end up really blowing up and hopefully having an Odell Beckham-like season and be a league winner. But if I'm going to be drafting more evenly and relying on him for my every week number two, without much depth at the position, then I'll probably be a little more inclined to pass on him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, looking at who he's going ahead of or around, I definitely would take Hurns over him, Crabtree, Lockett. And then I think when you get into the DeSean Jackson, Marvin Jones area there, you could make an argument that you'd want to go with the upside there with Coleman. As you get a little bit further, you've got Dorial Green-Beckham, who has appears that he's been demoted in Tennessee, and then Laquon Treadwell and Sterling Shepard. So you're starting to see some of the other rookie wide receivers pop up on the ADP here, but Coleman is the number one rookie in terms of being drafted right now, and probably justifiably so, given his likely role there for the Browns. So you want to talk a little bit about Gary Barnidge and the tight end situation there?
Sure. So again, this is a spot that Hugh has been fairly consistent at. We've seen him really favor his tight end in terms of targets. Saw 20% in 2010 with Zach Miller, different Zach Miller, not Chicago Zach Miller. And then even with Tyler Eifert out, we saw Jermaine Gresham get 17% of the team targets. And Eifert last year, even though he was hurt, he still accounted for 18% of the team targets. On top of that, the tight end's usually the primary red zone target in a Hugh Jackson offense. So with the uncertainty at wide receiver, I think that Gary Barnidge should approach his numbers from last year. Maybe he won't be as great, but he's going to get the workload and the target share to justify him being a top 10 tight end in fantasy drafts.
Yeah, I think I have him 11. I have him behind Ladarius Green at 8, Julius Thomas at 9, Dwayne Allen at 10. And I can definitely see the case. The thing that I worry about Barnidge is that he's one of these late breakout players. But he was great last year. There is some moving parts, and that's the new quarterback, probably RG3. RG3 does have some history to throw into his tight ends at in Washington there with Jordan Reed. But what you're saying about Hugh Jackson, and obviously he got really good production out of Tyler Eifert last year. That does make me feel a little bit better, and maybe I do like Dwayne Allen in that Colts offense, and Julius Thomas has been doing a lot of work with Blake Bortles to try to get on the same page. And so I think amongst those three, it's kind of a coin toss for me. I do like Ladarius Green in Pittsburgh a lot with Ben Roethlisberger there and Martavis Bryant sidelined. So I'm kind of looking at this my rankings here, and I think that Barnage's cap is probably at 9 or 8. Do you feel good about him going in at the number 10 spot in NFL 10s? Is that a reasonable spot for him?
That's a fair range. The one guy that does stand out to me that you mentioned is Dwayne Allen. If I'm picking in that 10 to 12 tight end range, I think Dwayne Allen's a guy that could potentially be a league winner just because of how heavily the Colts have used the tight end when Andrew Luck is healthy. So in a coin toss situation, because of the position, because you could end up streaming it if you do miss, I'll probably take Dwayne Allen in a coin flip between him and Barnage. But if I just kind of want that consistent week to week guy that I know is going to be solid, I'd probably favor Barnage.
So I think we agree that the Hugh Jackson effect on Gary Barnage is a positive one. My concern there is the quarterback situation, just the changes there. But I think it should be okay. I think you could take him with. I think his ADP is reasonable given all the uncertainty around him, because he was basically a top five guy last year, right?
Yeah, I think he finished the tight end four in PPR leagues.
There is some, I guess, some regression baked into his current ADP, so that you're not overpaying necessarily for what he did last year, not accounting for what
changes are going on there in Cleveland. So overall, the Browns are not a team that we're necessarily trying to load up on when it comes to drafting fantasy players, but there are a few interesting players, specifically Duke Johnson in PPR formats, Coleman, as we mentioned, Barnage, as we mentioned. Is there another receiver on that roster just that could even emerge? I'm pulling up their depth chart right now. They've got Andrew Hawkins, Taylor Gabriel, Terrell Pryor, Darius Jennings.
Yeah, it's ugly. I mean, Hawkins is 2 years removed from a 100-target season. I don't know if the volume or the quarterback play is going to be there to support that. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up signing a guy like Anquan Boldin at some point in the offseason because their wide receiver depth chart's pretty ugly.
And then Isaiah Crowell, he's not a pass catching running back, so his PPR value is low, but he's going in with the last pick in the ninth round, 9-12. 38th running back off the board. I think PPR formats, that's probably fair. If the Browns end up being more competitive than we think they will be, then he could see extra touches, a couple extra touchdowns over what we're projecting him for. I think certainly in standard formats, he's kind of an interesting middle late round pick because in standard the touchdowns and the yardage is more important than the receptions. And he should see plenty of work in that offense.
Yeah, I think that it's worth noting that last year the Browns ran the most plays in the league when trailing by a touchdown or more. It was like 52 offensive plays when trailing by a touchdown or more. So that had a lot to do with them being so pass heavy last year. We know Hugh likes to run the ball, and even if they only win 4 or 5 games, it's really hard in the NFL to consistently get blown out by that much. So I just think some natural luck and regression will bring that number of plays when trailing by such a big number down a little bit.
Okay, so let's before we move on to the quarterback advanced stats article that TJ wrote, I'd like to remind listeners that they can still get early bird pricing through the end of the month. A premium subscription for $24 and a DFS subscription, which is great, for $79. It's a regular price of $29 and $99, respectively. It ends June 30th, so get on board. We don't want to hear from you on July 1st or 2nd, wondering where the deal is. So you have until June 30th to get that discount. So moving on, want to talk a little bit about your process in terms of identifying quarterbacks that had some opportunity or maybe some that might turn out to be busts?
Sure. This is a study that I kind of fell into in the offseason, just playing with numbers and looking at different stats like I tend to do. And I found that one of the offensive stats that correlates very highly with quarterback fantasy success is yards per drive, which makes a lot of sense. Very efficient offenses usually are led by good quarterbacks, and good quarterbacks tend to score more fantasy points than other quarterbacks, especially when they're getting more opportunity to score touchdowns, which is the most important stat for for scoring fantasy points. So traditionally, looking at 5 years prior to last year, we've seen that yards per drive and quarterback fantasy points have an R value or a correlation of 0.81, which is a very, very strong correlation. So if you take all of that data, it fits very nicely on a trend line. As yards per drive goes up, quarterback scoring goes up. Last year, that wasn't the case. We saw yards per drive and quarterback fantasy points with an R value or a correlation just 0.4. So basically, what that's telling us is that a lot of good fantasy quarterbacks came from very inefficient offenses, and a lot of bad fantasy quarterbacks came from very efficient offenses. So it looked like last year was a bit of an outlier, and some of those quarterbacks that are on teams that do move the ball very well should improve in 2016. And those quarterbacks who did well that are on teams that don't move the ball very well as a whole, they should regress and have some negative regression in 2016.
All right, so let's talk about maybe some players that are overvalued. You list, I'll just list them off, and then you can talk about who you'd like to talk about. Cam Newton, the Panthers, Blake Bortles, the Jaguars, and Derek Carr, the Raiders. Why do you think that these players are maybe being a bit overvalued?
So Cam Newton is a guy that in the article I said that a quarterback one finish is still well within his range of outcomes. I just caution anybody that's drafting him expecting him to blow away the field like he did last year, just because Carolina's offense didn't move as efficiently as a typical offense that produces the top scoring fantasy quarterback does. Carolina ranked in the bottom half of the league in yards per drive, but obviously had the top scoring quarterback in the league. Basically, Cam, he relied a lot on his rushing touchdowns. He had 10 rushing touchdowns, and that's a stat that doesn't necessarily translate to for quarterbacks from year to year. And then he also had a very high touchdown rate, well over 7%, which is far above the league average and above his historical average. So just being that far above the field, we should expect some natural regression. And Carolina isn't a team that necessarily moves the ball extremely well. So they don't have as many red zone opportunities as we would hope for our top scoring quarterback.
Yeah, to touch on some of the stats you said there, you mentioned there, TJ, he had a 7.1% touchdown rate. He has a career average of 4.8, which is including that 7.1. In the previous 3 seasons, 4.0, 5.1, 3.9, his total touchdowns, or his total passing touchdowns, 19, 24, and 18 in the previous 3 years. He had 35 passing touchdowns last year. And then you mentioned the rushing touchdowns. He had 10 last year. He had 11 combined in 2013 and 2014. He had 8 in 2012, and as a rookie, he had 2000 in 2011. He had 14 touchdowns, so it had really been decreasing 14, 8, 6, 5 over the last 4 years prior to 2015, where he got 10. So we would expect that number to regress a little bit. Do you want to touch on Bortles or Carr at all?
Sure. So I think Bortles is one of the guys that a lot of people expect to regress a lot, and I think it's we're starting to see it baked into his ADP at this point. But Jacksonville ranked in the bottom 10 in the league in yards per drive, but still had a top four quarterback, and that was basically a function of Jacksonville having a really, really unbalanced red zone attack. 88% of their red zone touchdowns came from the pass, and also a lot of the Jaguars' passing success in fantasy, at least, had to do with game script. 20 of Bortles' 35 touchdowns came when they were trailing by at least a touchdown. So with an improved defense this offseason, we should expect the Jaguars to be in far fewer must-pass scenarios compared to last year.
Yeah, Bortles is going in the 10th round. Eli Manning, who I just wrote a sleeper alert about, is going in the 11th round. I actually have Eli going, or I have Eli a little bit of ahead of Bortles, but I do think that's kind of the sweet spot when it comes to drafting a quarterback if you want a guy that's sort of a top 12 type guy. Palmer going in the 10th round, Bortles 10th round, Eli 11th round, Philip Rivers 11th round. Then you start getting into Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Jameis Winston in terms of ADP, and then you're going all the way down. And then we're gonna get into your top player in terms of undervalued. He's going 19th off the board at the quarterback position. Tony Romo. Do you want to talk about him?
Yeah, Romo's a guy that's historically been a quarterback that has as much upside as any quarterback in the league. If you look at touchdown rate, which is usually a pretty good indicator of how much upside a quarterback can have, Tony Romo ranks third among active quarterbacks in touchdown rate. 5.7% of his career attempts have been touchdowns. Also, even without Romo, without Dez, the Cowboys were one of the most efficient offenses in the league last year, ranked 12th in yards per drive, and that has a lot to do with how good their offensive line is. They're able to run the ball and move the ball very well. They just weren't able to finish off those drives with touchdowns, especially from their quarterback. So with the return of Romo, with Dez, who is one of the best red zone targets in the league, and Ezekiel Elliott, who's expected to really put a spark in this offense, I think Romo could start sniffing QB1 numbers again in 2016.
Yeah, if you look at Romo's history as a fantasy quarterback, it's really impressive. Just going back, he's got one season in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. People love hearing me count to 8 on the podcast. But he's got one season in the last 8 prior to last year, where he did not finish in the top 11. So prior to last year, he had 3 straight number 11 finishes. He was seventh in 2011, and then his only non top 11 finish was his season where he only played 6 games. So if he's healthy, he should deliver low end QB1 numbers. I think that's the question with him is the health, but at the price of a 13th round pick, it's pretty easy to pivot to another, player on the waiver wire. I mean, you listeners out there know their leagues. Are there decent options to stream on the waiver wire? If so, you could draft Romo and in the 13th, 12th, 13th round, load up on receivers, running backs, and maybe a tight end. Grab Romo there, and then if something happens to him, you could easily get somebody off the waiver wire. If your league is one that there isn't a lot of quarterbacks on the waiver wire that have streaming capabilities, then maybe you draft two. You draft Romo, and maybe you draft somebody like Tyrod Taylor or Ryan Tannehill or somebody like that, and you kind of play the matchup each week. Maybe Romo comes back and regains his QB1 form, and you can cut your other quarterback if you want. But he's not a bad guy to target, and based on TJ's numbers, he should produce as long as he's healthy. I think that's a big question for me. I have him ranked 14th now. I had him quite a bit lower, but after reading this article, I kind of thought about him again. I looked at his career averages. I kind of altered his projections a bit. He popped up to 14. It's such a quagmire there between 10 and 22 or 20 at the quarterback position. Makes it a good position to really attack late. Do you want to talk about either of the other undervalued guys?
Yeah, one of the guys that really stands out, if we're just looking at this particular metric, is Matt Ryan. The Falcons ranked fourth in yards per drive last year, but only 26th in team quarterback fantasy points per game. That's the biggest gap we've seen in those two rankings since 2010. Basically, what that's saying is it's very difficult for a quarterback to be in an offense that's moving that efficiently and produce that few fantasy points. With Julio Jones, who's obviously one of the best receivers in the league, with Devontae Freeman, who had a great year last year, the Falcons should be able to sustain their offensive efficiency that they had last year. They added Mohamed Sanu and rookie tight end Austin Hooper, who isn't going to be a particularly big fantasy target. But the point is that they didn't have any downgrades in their weapons. They should be able to move the ball very effectively. And since Julio has been drafted, Matt Ryan's scored on average 18.4 fantasy points per game. So getting up back to where we expect him to be based on the team, he should be a pretty good value given his price right now.
Yeah, last year he finished 19th, which was a big disappointment for him. But prior to that, he had 4 top 8 finishes in the last 5 years. He finished 14th in 2013, and that was due to Julio Jones. That was a season where he only played 5 games. So if Julio is on the field, generally speaking, Matt Ryan has been a top 8 quarterback. If you don't look at last year, and from what TJ is saying, that was a lot of bad luck, fumbles, interceptions, red zone inefficiency that should correct itself or regress to the mean this year. So Matt Ryan is another quarterback that you could pick up in the 12th, 13th round. And you could even pair him with Romo if you wanted. and give yourself a little committee there, two former top 10 type quarterbacks that probably should regress to that type of play, that low QB1 type play that we're used to. It's just such a deep position right now that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to draft one early. The only guy that I, of the top three or four guys that I sort of don't mind drafting, maybe in the sixth, seventh round, is Russell Wilson. I just think he's going to have a great year since they have continually increased the pass attempts there every year that he's been there. Marshawn Lynch is gone. Pete Carroll is alluding to opening up the offense a little bit. So with Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin, Jimmy Graham coming back, hopefully healthy, Jermaine Kearse re-signed, their offense should be pumping on all cylinders. So he's the guy that, if he's there in the seventh round, maybe the sixth, I might snag him. But otherwise, I'm waiting until the 10th, 11th round before I pick up my quarterback. What are you doing at the quarterback position since we're talking quarterbacks?
I'm kind of in the same camp as you. I'm generally waiting. Unless there's a top guy that falls at least 2 rounds below his ADP, then I'm going to wait very long. I think you have the 12 through 24 projected within something like 20 points of each other. So it just shows how deep the position is. And guys like Romo, I really want to just keep loading up on my running backs, wide receivers, just because there's no need to make a reach at quarterback this year.
Absolutely. And that's all the time we have for the podcast. Be sure to get your early bird subscription over at the website. You could also look for the pinned tweet at the top of my Twitter page at 444 underscore John if you want the direct link to that offer. You can also follow TJ Hernandez at TJ Hernandez on Twitter if you're so inclined. So see you next week on 444's most accurate podcast.